We're checking in on the race to find a safe and effective vaccine for COVID-19. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the New York Times' coronavirus vaccine tracker, researchers are testing 45 vaccines in clinical trials on people. 11 vaccines are in large-scale phase 3 testing. And we learned this week Johnson & Johnson paused its phase 3 trial to investigate an illness in a study volunteer. So what questions do you have about what it takes to make a safe and effective vaccine? Will you trust one when one becomes available or more become available? We're at 800-642-1234. We have Dr. Leo Nisala, who is a physician and clinical scientist in San Francisco, focusing on clinical trials and drug development. Dr. Nisala, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi there. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Hi. So we're seeing, you know, Johnson & Johnson and other pharmaceutical companies pausing their vaccine trials after, something happens, whether it's a participant who is sick or otherwise. What is happening here with these pauses?
That's a great point to start the conversation. And like every American, I'm too excited about a COVID vaccine. And I do think that a vaccine will allow us to go get life back to normal. But vaccine trials that have paused did so by an abundance of caution. So first, let me assure folks at home listening to this that the recent pauses in the clinical trials studying a potential coronavirus vaccine due to safety concern should not cause you to worry. This is science at work, and this is how the normal process of data review goes. So when discussing a potential new vaccine, there are some important points to consider. And one of them is that vaccines have significantly reduced the prevalence of many diseases, yet they need to be studied and need to understand how the body reacts to those vaccines. So on Tuesday, we learned that the late stage trial of the Eli Lilly antibody treatment for COVID was paused. And just earlier, we learned that J&J's coronavirus vaccine trial was being paused and the safety monitoring board was examining the adverse event. And prior to that, AstraZeneca's vaccine trial being paused in the United States, but it was reopened in the United Kingdom after a subject failed. So typically it takes years to complete those studies. But those trial pauses are not uncommon in the development of vaccine and drugs.
They're not uncommon. So it's not something that we should certainly be alarmed by. But do we know why, for instance, AstraZeneca can reboot its clinical trials in other parts of the world, but still on hold in the U.S.? What's going on there?
So AstraZeneca is in partnership with Oxford University in the U.K., and they are partnering with other institutions across the world. The FDA has its own standard process to review those safety implications, and in this case, an unexplained illness in a subject that was participating in a trial in the United Kingdom. And the FDA has yet to respond to AstraZeneca whether they're going to reopen the trial or not. So this, again, it's not uncommon, and that has happened in the past with other trials as well.
So when a trial is paused, though, is that a concern where the trial may not be started again and the trial is basically scrapped?
So the trial may be paused in a specific manner, let's say one in the United States, but may continue in other parts of the world. And that would add to the evidence of the body of the evidence that they're collecting from these vaccine subjects when they subject the vaccine for registration, for example. The trial may continue elsewhere and does not necessarily need to be completed here.
We're talking with Dr. Leo Nisala, who's a physician and research scientist focusing on clinical trials and drug development, taking your questions as well as we watch the step-by-step process of a COVID vaccine go through the phases. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Liam, who is joining us from Eau Claire this morning. Hi, Liam.
Hi. I had a question based on, why do the vaccines have to be paused if someone falls ill during one of the trials, and how do they effectively pause those trials?
Great questions. Go ahead, Dr. Nisala.
Yeah, so usually in clinical studies that we are comparing a vaccine to placebo, there is a process in which you analyze in real time the patient's data and to see how the body will be reacting to the drug that you're giving it. So in this case, for vaccine development, you want to ensure that not only the drug is safe, but it has some clinical activity there. In order for you to do that, companies will look at, you know, patient data and looking at the subject's information to understand if the vaccine is safe to continue or not. Should there be any signal to of alarm, the companies stop the trial and pause it for a moment to analyze the data before continuing to dose subjects. That's a standard process. And although it's quite paradoxical, it's also very reassuring, because we expect to see these signals that may not indicate a problem. And we expect to see these companies stopping this trial so they can carefully look at the clinical data and see if there's anything else happening to the body of the participants who are receiving this experimental vaccine. So this is a natural process, but because we are in this pandemic together and all the processes for drug development have speed up so much, it's natural for folks to be alarmed, but the opposite. It gives us doctors and scientists the reassurance that we are not cutting corners on safety.
Dr. Nisala, can you step back for us and explain the phases, the phase one trial, phase two, phase three, and how a vaccine comes to market?
Of course, yeah. So when we talk about vaccine development, we have to look at all the phases that it takes from the starting of the design of the clinical trial concept all the way to having a vaccine fully approved for broad use. So the first human studies, which are the phase one studies, where companies look for vaccine safety, and also they look for the effective dose. So those are the phase one studies. And currently for COVID-19, there are 30 vaccine being studied there. On the phase two studies, when you expand the number of patients and the patient population gets a little bit more defined, the phase two studies, we are also looking at the safety implications of the study and the dose that you have chosen in the prior phase. And there are currently 15 candidates there. For the phase three trials, where the very large scale efficacy tests, you're looking to see how the clinical efficacy that you hypothesize based on the phase one and phase two studies are going to behave a larger scale population to see if your data on safety actually holds. And there are currently 11 candidates on that phase.
Who finds out or who knows who is taking a placebo in these trials?
So studies that are usually blinded, you have a subject that's receiving a drug that, so the subject doesn't know that he or she is receiving a vaccine or a placebo. And in most cases, the investigator also doesn't know. So the doctors and the research team and the staff does not know. Who does see that information that is masked is the company. So some individuals within the company who are developing these drugs have access to understanding which subject is receiving which drug, but that is very dependent on the study itself.
So very dependent on the study itself, but, you know, very critical information as you assess whether, I would suppose, that trial can progress from one phase to the next.
That's correct.
We're talking with Dr. Leo Nisola, who works in clinical trial development. We're talking about the race to manufacture a safe and effective vaccine for COVID-19. Are you perhaps in a clinical trial now? Maybe it's for cancer or for another type of trial. What is it like? What do you see as the advantages of participating in a clinical trial? What are the drawbacks? Join in with your questions and your experiences, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Dr. Nisola here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're discussing vaccine development here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Vaccines typically require years of research and trials before reaching our doctor's office, our clinic, but scientists are trying to rapidly produce a vaccine by next year, and we're all watching. What concerns do you have about the COVID vaccine trials? What questions do you have about the stages of development and the role of the FDA in regulation? Are you in a clinical trial? Tell us about it, 800-642-1234. We have Dr. Leo Nisola, who's a physician and research scientist who focuses on clinical trials and drug development. He's our guide. Let's take another call now. Paris is joining us from Muskego this morning. Hi, Paris.
Hi, good morning. I had a question for the expert. How do you know how efficacious the vaccine is going to be, given that there are potentially different strains and different mutations of COVID? You know, the only thing that the public really has to compare it to is the flu vaccine, which is similarly, you know, one vaccine geared towards one particular influenza virus, but there are many different mutations and strains of the flu.
Paris, thanks. Dr. Nisola, what about efficacy? What can you tell us?
That's a great question, actually, and thanks for asking it. So vaccine efficacy, it's usually dependent on the percentage of the reduction of disease in a group of people compared to the people that were not vaccinated. That's usually using the most favorable of the conditions. But, you know, in different diseases, the efficacy and the effectiveness will be measured differently. So each one of those clinical studies that we mentioned today have different endpoints that at the end of the day, we want to make sure that, number one, it's safe for a healthy individual to receive, as at the same time that is safe for someone who has comorbidities like obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure. It's also safe for them to receive. And at the same time that it protects against a specific disease that you're vaccinating. An important point on this process is that not every vaccine candidate is successful. So we have examples through the course of history of vaccine development that some studies failed. And just to give a little bit perspective on the very uniqueness of the moment which we live in now, COVID-19 lives in the shadow of the most vaccine virus we've faced. In HIV, after nearly 40 years of work, we have yet to find a vaccine for it. And back in 2007, researchers stopped a vaccine study because it seemed to be increasing the risk of the HIV infection. So that was a trial that actually failed. The vaccine that was built on the backbone was made from a modified virus called adenovirus. And in that trial, people that were being infected with the adenovirus 5, they actually developed more of the diseases related to HIV than people who didn't. And one theory there is that some people responded more strongly than others to a component of the vaccine that was stress tested in that trial, STEP trial, making them more vulnerable to HIV. So, short story, HIV was discovered almost 40 years ago, and we still have not found a vaccine for it,
Because
which I.
an individual's reaction can vary from one person to the next. Everyone's
That.
body is unique.
That's correct. And that's why I think the listener's question was so important, because it's important to understand all sorts of patients' populations when we are studying vaccines. I do not think that this is going to happen with COVID. There are so many contenders and so many different approaches. However, that's something that has happened in the past.
So, what is considered to be a successful, effective vaccine? I mean, certainly it's not 100% effectiveness because, as I think we've understood this before, that that's just a really high bar, impossible bar to set.
Yeah, that's right. And I think without going into the numbers of what effectiveness look like, one important part is an important point is folks that are healthy should remain healthy while receiving a vaccine, and folks that have comorbidities and underlying conditions should feel safe enough to receive a vaccine. So I think the first premises of medicine of first do no harm applies here too. And again, we have over 30 vaccines being tested in phase one and 15 in phase two and 11 in phase three in the United States. So it's reassuring to know that we have many candidates.
We're talking with Dr. Leo Nisala, who's a physician and research scientist who focuses on clinical trials and drug development. And we're looking at the path forward for a COVID-19 vaccine. Taking your questions at 800-642-1234. I want to take a moment to look at the FDA in all of this because there's been so much heightened scrutiny of the FDA and certainly its emergency use authorizations and transparency. So what is the role of the FDA as this as a drug comes to market?
So the FDA has been a beacon of light through the course of its existence, shedding information and trusted data and trusted drug approvals. So it's an institute that has a name for itself worldwide. Many, many countries look up to the FDA as to provide guidance as to drugs should be available for all or not. That said, we live in a very interesting period of time. And in times like this, we see that strong leadership matters. And just to step back for a moment, the virus that has caused COVID-19 has infected over 7 million people in the United States and almost 40 million people worldwide. And there have been over 215,000 deaths this year in the United States alone. And as a doctor, to me, this is outrageous. And at the same time, it's very heartbreaking too. So that alone should make us take some time to acknowledge that there will be over 200,000 empty seats during Thanksgiving. And COVID for me is personal too. I have lost a loved one to the coronavirus.
I'm sorry.
I understand how it feels to not be able to say goodbye and to give your family member, not be able to give your family member a last hug or to say your piece because of the safety precautions. So this has been very heartbreaking for all of us. And more importantly, when we see shocking news like the herd immunity approach
The
gets me
White House
concerned.
has endorsed a petition calling for the end of social distancing. Instead, the petition is arguing that young and healthy people should go out, live their lives as usual, and more people contracting the virus, eventually reaching herd immunity. What are your thoughts on this?
And thanks for asking this. I was shocked when I saw it, and I immediately thought about seniors and underserved communities that have been hit hardest by this pandemic, and also thought about my aunt who fell ill for COVID and passed away, and I'm concerned for them. The short answer is that the plan for herd immunity is no plan at all. But let me explain why I think that. The virus spreads through droplets. It spreads through aerosol. And in conditions where the ventilation is poor, or limited, it has a higher chance of contracting. And the infection fatality rate of COVID, it's several times higher than the seasonal influenza. And for me, it's shocking that after over 200 people, 1,000 people have died, we're trying to compare it to the flu. And there's another important point that the infection can lead to persistent illness in young, healthy people. And in fact, I have a good friend of mine. He's a medical oncologist in Florida. He's a world-renowned lung oncologist, and he registered important immunotherapy drugs for lung cancer patients. And he's a very fit individual that used to run 5 miles every day. And because he was working in the hospital, unfortunately, he contracted the virus in the beginning of this year. And he needed to be hospitalized. He was put on experimental treatments. And months after he got COVID, he's still experiencing long COVID symptoms. So once a patient gets COVID, it's unclear how long this protective immunity will last. And like other seasonal coronaviruses, this virus is capable of reinfecting people who have already had the disease and who developed antibodies. And we saw the first case of this in South Korea in the beginning of the year, and now we saw the first case in the United States this month.
We're running short on time here, and I just want to ask you, what are you watching for in this era right now of vaccine development? What is something that you're keeping an eye on?
That's a great point to end this. And I think this time that we live of high political interest, it's important to have clinical data transparency from the vaccine study. So doctors and scientists alike are encouraging the population to feel calm about a new vaccine, but we are also encouraging the companies that are making those vaccines to make those data points available to scientists like myself, so we can actually look at the scientific collaboration between health agencies and drug companies, so we can feel about confident about the good news that are on the way.
Dr. Nisala, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Leo Nisala is a physician and research scientist focusing on clinical trials and drug development. Coming up, we talk with former State Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen. He's co-chairing a bipartisan group that's spreading a message to Wisconsin voters that they can trust the voting system amid the pandemic, regardless of what format they cast their ballot. We'll learn about the efforts of Vote Safe Wisconsin right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.